This is the TSN MMA show with Aaron Bronstetter and Bazooka Joe Valtellini.
GSP vacates his piece of history, and we have a new undisputed middleweight champion. Fed champion Robert Whittaker will face Luke Rockhold in Perth, Australia on February the 10th in his first official title defense. Francis Ngannou gets his title shot, and it's in just over 1 month. Will the UFC have enough time to promote this properly? We'll discuss. Two Canadians join the show. Misha Sirkunov joins me for an in-studio interview, and Chad Lapreeze checks in. And Joe's calling glory this weekend. It's going to be on pay-per-view. Fantastic card. So I'm pleased to be joined by a special guest co-host, actually also Canadian, so three Canadians. The Calgary Sun's Danny Austin. He covers the UFC as well as the Calgary Stampeders. Danny, thanks for coming in and doing this.
Oh, man, I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Flying all the way in from Calgary just to do the show. It's really nice of you. Class act.
Yes, flying all the way in from my parents' place.
It really, 15 minutes. It really shows the importance of this podcast. People are willing to fly in from the West Coast just to do it. It's a big opportunity. So obviously the big news, Georges St-Pierre last night vacates the UFC middleweight title. So and if you're listening on radio, yeah, last night, Thursday night. Very, very interesting turn of events. One that I'm sure a lot of us saw coming. I mean, really the first seed for me that I saw was the week of UFC 217. They announced UFC 221 is going to be in Perth, Australia. They announced it on the Monday. Like, why? Why announce it then? It just seems crazy to me that they would announce that, because anybody with common sense knows that that card is headlined by Robert Whittaker.
You don't have any choice. I mean, Australia has been waiting for their guy. They've got their guy.
Well, you don't have a choice as to do it there, but you have a choice as to when to announce it.
Announcing it
the same week as Bisping GSP is like, now the writing's on the wall that this title is going to be, I mean, Whittaker's going to be defending that interim title or whatever, amalgamating into the official title, the undisputed title, that at that particular event, unifying the titles, and you know that neither guy's, although Bisping in hindsight might have, but that George is certainly not going to fight in February.
Well, and especially because given, you know, the way the 217 went, just the entire build-up to that Bisping-St. Pierre fight, I mean, GSP dictated the terms.
Yeah.
He went to the press conference. He said he wasn't going to be ready till fall. The UFC tried to push him into a summer fight. He said no, he wasn't ready. And then they did it in November, exactly when he wanted to do it. So if he didn't want to fly halfway around the world, or maybe, you know, more than halfway around the world to Australia and fight, he wasn't going to do it. So you're right. It made absolutely no sense to just sort of set a timeline on a fight for GSP when we know that's not how he plays the game.
Yeah, well, I said on Jay and Dan yesterday, give myself a cheap plug, George Orwell once said, all animals are equal. Some animals are more equal than others. And in the UFC, GSP is one of those animals, as is Conor McGregor, and if Ronda Rousey ever decided she wanted to come back, as is Ronda Rousey. You know, the UFC is, you know, people always say, well, how can this be considered a legitimate sport if you have guys like Georges St-Pierre winning the title and then not defending it? It's like, well, mixed martial arts is the sport. The UFC is a promotion. People need to wrap their head around that for a second. The UFC doesn't need to operate like the NFL. They can operate like the WWE. They can operate like boxing. And that's probably how they should operate. If you're a promotion where your mandate is to make money, and money they do make. They just sold the company for $4.3 billion last year, if you were paying any attention to the sport. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know that. So realistically, this is the right move for Georges St-Pierre. This is, you know, George now has a blank canvas. He can call his own shots. He can decide what's next, if there's anything next. And to me, I think this is really the precursor to a fight with Conor McGregor.
Yeah, I've thought that from the start. I mean, I thought that he might go after the 170, and we know Conor has fought at 170 against Nate. I thought that would be the fight that eventually they were building towards. Look, I think George did the right thing here. I mean, it goes beyond just whether or not, you know, he's allowed to do it. He went, he won the championship, and unlike Conor, who for the last, you know, year, 2 years, has been walking around saying he's featherweight champion, even though he doesn't fight at 145 anymore, George decided, you know, the best thing for the division, the best thing for his other athletes.
He won't walk around claiming to be a middleweight champion tomorrow, but...
Yeah, you know. But I mean, he walked away, and he did exactly what we want. He's allowed the division to move forward. The division, frankly, is in a better place than it was a month and a half ago when Michael Bisping hadn't actually defended his title against a top contender. Now we got a great fight. This is good for George. I think it's good for the UFC. I mean, this all works out. And look, if you can build a Conor McGregor, George St. Pierre fight...
Yeah, and you know, Dana White last week said, oh, how many more buys does that do than Conor versus anybody else? It's like, significantly. It could do like 3 million buys. Yeah. The sky's the limit, really.
It's without question the biggest fight in UFC history, if it can happen. Yeah. And we will all roll our eyes at it and say this is a dumb fight. You know, this and that. And then we'll all watch it and we'll all probably have a great time. And the buildup will be great. And seeing those two personalities, I mean,
it doesn't need to be for a belt. Five-round main event, 165-pound catch weight, 160-pound catch weight if George thinks he can cut the 160. Again, these guys are going to call their own terms. Like, you know, I think that with George, this is, from a business standpoint, the only move. Like, who else is in an interesting fight, save for maybe Nate Diaz for George St. Pierre, that is a sellable fight in the eyes of the pay-per-view buying public?
I don't think at middleweight there is a single...
No, absolutely not.
Like, people would tune in because of GSP.
Bisping was the perfect foil for GSP because it's an easier matchup. No disrespect to Michael Bisping. I think now, in hindsight, that's fair to say. Michael Bisping's a promotional machine. He gets on the mic, insults George. George doesn't need to do the heavy lifting in that regard, where, you know, if Conor comes around, that'll be the same type of deal.
100%.
A Whitaker versus George St. Pierre promotional lead-in is, I mean, you're laughing, and really that's the correct response.
I mean, bless both of them. Yeah. That would be the most boring
They're
promotion.
Both gentlemen, really. They're both gentlemen, but, you know, gentlemen don't sell fights.
No.
You know, it's just in any combat sport, other than George, really. George is the only real, like, the real gentleman that has been able to sell cards.
Yeah, and I mean, I can't really sell Rockhold George either. I mean, there's, like, you go through the contenders at middleweight, and unfortunately...
Weidman,
The one that you would have been able to sell in your ideal world, had you not had an interim title or anything, is the Anderson Silva fight.
And you know what? I think Tyron versus GSP is a somewhat sellable fight, but I just don't see what the upside for George is. When he goes back, wins the welterweight title, and retires again, like, you know, why?
I mean, beyond proving to himself that he can do it.
There's a component
of all of what George is doing right now where it does feel like, you know, he does take himself seriously as an athlete and a martial artist. And he's not doing it for us.
Yeah.
There's a part of me that thinks this is about George and him, you know, continuing to prove that he's not over.
And then I've seen from the dark corners of the internet people suggesting that Ben Askren versus GSP is that what you were thinking? Thought I was going with this? I don't think it was.
I did not think you were.
Yeah,
going
but
there.
People are suggesting GSP versus Ben Askren is the fight to make. And no disrespect to Ben Askren, but I just don't think that he has the promotional clout. Like I think that I love Ben Askren. I think he's a phenomenal fighter, and I think he's a great speaker. Really, he has it all. But I don't think the UFC is buying into that. I don't think the UFC wants to promote Ben Askren after all the insults that he's hurled towards Dana White over the years. I mean, there's a degree of ego there, I would imagine. And it's just it's a tough sell, really, with the MMA buying public.
There's a test that I do. I have a bunch of high school friends who I'm still very close with, and they will, whenever they know I'm covering a card or there just is a card, they'll ask me, hey, do I know anyone on this card? And you know, there are times when I want to know if a guy like Francis Ngannou is getting over, and I will ask these guys, like, hey, do you know who this is? None of them know who Ben Askren is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a fight that if you're a hardcore MMA fan, you're fascinated by. If you're not, you're skipping right over it and watching, you know, college football on a Saturday night.
Yeah. You know, one interesting thing I learned this week, actually, was that the third most mentioned fight on Twitter of the year was this past weekend. Was Aldo versus Holloway, too, which surprised me.
Really?
Yeah. Number two was Jones Cormier, and number one was GSP Bisping.
I'm a little bit shocked.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised by that.
I mean,
that being said, I don't know what else would be. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I guess
If you go back to the beginning of the year, you go pay per view by pay per view.
January, February, March were not great.
There wasn't one in January. Early February was home in Durand, which I'm sure had negative mentions on Twitter.
I pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah, and then in March, I mean, it basically didn't. It's been erased from history. Cyborg the champion now. In March we had. Ferguson and Khabib fall off, and then the main event ended up being
Thompson
Rockhold. Thompson Woodley. And then we go to April. That was a great card. That was the Miocic and JDS card.
Well, April was Buffalo.
Oh, sorry.
April
was Cormier and Johnson, right? Yeah. Cormier Johnson too. And then May was
in Dallas for Miocic and JDS.
JDS.
Great card.
Yeah,
awesome.
A fantastic card, top to bottom. But again, in terms of mentions, I mean, if you think of the amount of people that live in Brazil. And you think of Holloway Aldo 2-1 was actually in May, and then in July we had the 213 card that fell apart, and ended up being headlined by Whitaker and Romero.
Was that the headliner?
Yeah, that was the headliner. Bia Shevchenko Nunes dropped off day of.
I was deep in my CFL. That was the week of the season, so I did watch the card, but I have no memories.
Yeah,
of what
yeah.
Happened
I barely I barely remember being there. Like I was there, and I can't tell you. I don't know if I can tell you any other fights on that card. That card is a complete afterthought, which is really strange for a summer card.
Historically, I mean, you just go back. Those were the biggest cards.
Absolutely. And I think they wanted it to be. Like, they wanted to get there. Things just kept falling apart. And then, of course, you go to July, and that was, you know, the Cormier versus Jones fight. Fantastic card with Cyborg Avenger on the card. August was Demetrius and Borg that fell off the card and then was headlined by Shevchenko and Nunes.
Yeah.
In Edmonton, right?
Yeah, that was first week of September.
First week of September. So what was August then?
I believe that they went straight.
Oh, yeah, they didn't have anything August. Yeah. That was where they were going to do one in Seattle, and it fell off because of Mayweather-McGregor.
Yeah. So that's what was in August.
That was in August. That was a somewhat important fight. And then you keep going, whatever, you keep going down the line.
Well, I mean, I'm thrilled that Holloway Aldo got that much love because, I mean, that was a great fight with two, you know, fascinating fighters, and I want Max Holloway to get all the love that he can because I just think he's one of the more compelling people in the sport.
Yeah, and we'll go back and recap that fight a little bit later on. So let's just look at George's statement. So my fight at UFC 217 was one of the greatest nights of my life, but I now need to take some time to focus on my health. Out of respect for the athlete and the sport, I don't want to hold up a division. I will be giving up my belt, and once I'm healthy, I would look forward to working with the UFC to determine what's next in my career. So you can read between the lines there. Robin Black spoke to George yesterday. And relayed on SportsCenter that George basically, you know, he patted guys like Whitaker and Kelvin Gastelum on the back and said, you know, like, it would be really unfair for me to hold up this division when there's guys like that. And I don't want to be like Conor, pretty much. Like, he named Conor and said, you know, I don't want to be like Conor McGregor, who's holding up the lightweight division and has previously held up the featherweight division.
Which, I mean, I love. Like, there's a part of me that just, as a Canadian, I have this narrative in my head of GSP just coming back to, like, restore order in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I do a little bit. I feel like that's what he's doing. And people are going to roll their eyes and say he never intended on fighting at middleweight. You know, and that was my assumption as well, if I'm being totally honest. I thought he saw a fight he could win in Bisping, wanted to win a second title, have a big fight, and came back and did it.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, this is what I want. If you're not going to fight again, just be honest with it.
For Conor, it's going to be almost 2 years if he fights in the summer. Like, yeah. Dana White told me at the event, you know, okay, Conor, he kind of said tongue in cheek, Conor suspended till the summer.
I saw that interview. Yeah.
because I pushed him on the fact that Conor put his hands on two officials in one night, mm-hmm. you know, and that we've seen Roy Nelson get suspended for it. And, we've seen Jason Hyget let go for it, and he kind of passed the buck and said, oh, that's up to Mike Mazzulli. And I said, Mazzulli has no jurisdiction over Conor. They can't suspend Conor for a minute, right? Yeah. So,
and, I mean, they tried to do the whole, oh, Conor was supposed to fight at the end of December, and then, you know, a week later, Dana's acknowledging that Conor may never fight again. So, yeah. I mean, credit to you for asking those questions, because I don't think anyone else asked them last week, really.
Well, they're important questions to be asked. I mean, your biggest star commits something that's tantamount to assault. Yeah. And, you know, gets not even a slap on the wrist, like no public statement whatsoever. No. Whereas Verdum throws a boomerang at Colby Covington and there's a release within hours.
Yeah, I mean, it's the problem. And I guess you could relay
and
this
you
back
can go
to
back to Orwell. Yeah. all goes back to George Orwell's quote.
Yeah, but
some
I guess
animals,
I mean,
are more equal than others.
You can relay this a little bit to the GSP thing. I mean, the UFC needs superstars, crossover stars, transcendent stars in order to sell their cards. And they have a wonderful product for the most part, top to bottom, but you do need those guys and those girls. And the problem is when they get to that level, they get to dictate the terms a little bit. And the UFC probably right now feels like their relationship with Conor is a little tenuous. And,
and they're also in the middle of a TV negotiation, right? Like,
yeah,
optics are very important right now.
I mean, I will say that if I can, you know, Dana not making a statement, the UFC not making a statement is one thing. Bellator literally using that incident to promote that card.
Yeah.
And almost encouraging that sort of behavior is, you know, is gross on a totally different level.
Well, I mean, the best is the commentary. He's like, the notorious Conor McGregor. You know, Goldberg's like, it's like this great event's happening. And then Jimmy Smith's like, what's happening here? Takes a dark turn. But you know what? I don't blame Bellator for using it. If you look at what the ratings were for that incident, like, there was a massive spike in viewing audience when that happened. And you have it in your pocket because it's happened before the air date. You kind of can't really fault them for it. I mean, you're not supposed to really listen. Again, this is the promotion business.
They're a business too. I get it.
These guys need to promote their businesses. They need eyeballs. That's their mandate, really.
Yeah, and I mean, I can hate certain things like that. You can dislike something while also understanding why it happened, and that's kind of what I mean. They weren't going to cut it out.
Yeah, they had. But they could have. Because when I first reached out to Bellator, I was like, is there video available of this? And they were like, no. It was a one-word answer. It was like, no. Huh. And so then I think over time, they're like, well, this could be a gift. Like, let's Yeah. We've got the most famous mixed martial artist in the world in our cage, causing a scene. Everybody's picking it up. You know, it's no secret. Let's roll with it.
Yeah.
Which is probably, from a business standpoint and an audience standpoint, the right move.
Yeah, I mean, I still fault them for it a little bit. I mean, yeah. I don't think it needed to be their primary tweet. But
but then again, what was that card? What was the headliner again?
All right, can name me a single fighter. Yeah. So.
I can name Charlie Ward, who was the guy that was the teammate of Conor McGregor, who we went into the cage to hug and whatnot. But going back to Whitaker and Rockhold, I mean, it does restore balance to the middleweight division, but this division just got a whole lot less interesting. I mean,
yeah, it's why all the complaints about Bisping, which I had as well. I thought Bisping, you know, them giving him Dan Henderson and then not fighting for over a year and then finally coming back to CSB, I found it problematic. At the same time, you know, Bisping as a champion.
The problem with it is that since Bisping won the championship, the division's been kind of decimated. Because if you think about it, at the time, you know, Bisping wins the belt and there's a lineup of high quality guys there. You know, you've got Weidman before he railed off a bunch of losses. You've got Rockhold, who's only fought once since then, who had just lost to Bisping. You've got Jacare, who ends up losing to Whitaker. You've got Whitaker, who's in the mix. You've got Musasi before he goes to Bellator. Like, there was just a lot. Well, there was a lineup of talent.
And let's be honest,
waiting for that shot. Now, if you look at middleweight, it's like who's there?
Yeah, I mean, you didn't even name Yoel Romero there.
And Romero, right, is like the number one guy probably at the time. Yeah. Who slipped my mind.
Exactly.
And that just goes to show how long of a list of legit contenders there were for that belt 2 years ago. And now, you know, people can say George has restored to order, but at what cost, right? Because now you've got a bunch of guys you could have marketed. I mean, mostly older guys. So it is good for them that Whitaker ended up being the guy that kind of, you know, the cream that rose to the top of this division because he's so young and is marketable in an entire country like George was. But, you know, Rockhold, I don't think, has the same cachet as he once did. Weidman lost a bunch in a row. He looked good against Gastelum. Gastelum just looked good against Bisping, so he's kind of in the mix there. Bisping's now an afterthought.
Yeah. And I mean, Romero.
Romero can still do whatever. Like, Romero can still have a big win and get back in there. And same with Jacare. Jacare's fighting Brunson, and Brunson's kind of moved up a little bit. So you don't really have, you still have a long list of guys that could be there, but you don't really have a defined list of guys that's like, okay, this guy could challenge for the belt tomorrow, other than, I guess, Rockhold, who's the I think is the correct choice for this title shot.
I mean, when Bisping won, that was supposed to be Weidman, Rockhold too, and then Weidman fell out. And at that time, as you're saying, I mean, I literally think there were five guys who we felt could be a champion, could be the champion on any given day. And it's unfortunate. And I mean, there's got to be a happy medium because, look, I mean, I want contenders fighting contenders. I don't think it's always got to be a contender fighting for the belt.
Yeah.
But when two contenders fight, one of them falls to the back of the line. And that's clearly what's happened. And, you know, Jacare probably shouldn't have taken that Robert Whittaker fight. He took it on relatively short notice. And, but, I mean,
probably thought he was going to win it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Rockhold is a guy who he clearly, I mean, he's, look, there was a time when Rockhold was one of my favorite fighters to interview and all that. He is a little bit arrogant. And that doesn't seem to translate with fans on TV. But, I mean, if he comes in and looks the way he did in that original Weidman fight.
Oh, yeah. He could be. I heard, Nick Baldwin, who we know, said that he thinks that Whitaker's going to end up being a 3-1 favorite when the fight closes. Like, no.
No.
No, Rockhold's a beast, man. Yeah. Like, Rockhold is, I mean, the problem with Rockhold is he's a little bit chinny, and that's where Whitaker can have, you know, a large advantage over him. But in terms of wrestling, grappling, pretty much everything else, Rockhold probably holds the advantages.
I mean, Rockhold said it after his last fight, which was Branch, I believe.
Branch, yeah. But he was in trouble in the first round.
He was, because he got hit. I mean, it was with a left hook again, was it not? So it was the exact same thing that he got hit with by Bisping, which knocked him out. And he didn't get knocked out, fortunately, but that does show a level of just arrogance again, where he had over a year to train for that fight and came in and made the same mistake.
Yeah.
So he's got to get that out, because Whitaker will knock him out if he fights that way. But I believe he is the best fighter possibly in the UFC at the ground and pound game. I mean,
when he gets on top of you, you're just in gigantic trouble.
You're just done.
Yeah.
And he's got so many weapons, and, you know, I think he's an amazing fighter. But if he comes in and looks like he did against Branch, I think Whitaker smokes him. It has been a while since he won that Weidman fight. Yeah. So,
and I mean, if you do look at the casualties that I mentioned of the division, I think that it ends up being worth it for the UFC to have that GSP Bisping fight, you know, in terms of for the promotion. I mean, would you rather have a bunch of cards that draw 200 to 300,000 or a card that draws what they said is over 1 million?
And I mean, the energy of fight week, like I always, I mean, I kind of have this just anecdotal feeling about these cards. That was a special, special night. And a lot of people tuned in. And I think it brought a lot of people back to the sport. I mean, Dana said that it was the highest rated fight in Canadian history.
Yeah, the highest rated pay-per-view. Yeah, the highest, most bought pay-per-view, yeah.
And then the card was great. And all of my friends were like, wow, the UFC really puts on a great product. Yeah. That alone makes it worth it. I
mean, 100%.
Emotional standpoint.
Did you market your product to the more kind of fair weather fans? And I'll be interested to see what the numbers are for UFC 218.
I mean, I suspect not great.
Yeah, but again, third most mentioned fight of the year. The numbers in Brazil will probably be massive because whenever Aldo fights, the numbers are big. So, I mean, we can't look at it from a myopic standpoint where we look at just North America. I mean, the sport globally is, you know, the global presence is just as important, right?
And, I mean, you could have carried over some of those
casual
fans too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's why I'm interested in it. I'm interested if people were like, wow, that was a great card. I need to see the next event. Because now if they've watched that next event, they're like, wow.
No kidding.
Now there have been two incredible events in a row. Even if you saw the highlights and you're like, oh, man, I missed that uppercut. That Ngannou, wow.
I mean, sport's built on highlights like that.
And we can segue to Ngannou now because...
how much I love talking about
him. Yeah, I know you love him. And I mean, so do I. I spoke to him back in January when I was like, this guy's going to be a big deal. And I don't think I was alone in that. You know, I spoke to him and he's just his story's incredible. He's an incredible fighter. He's an incredible learner. He's just getting better and better with each fight. And now he's thrust into a heavyweight title fight that could basically rocket him to being the biggest star in the sport, save for a guy like Conor McGregor and maybe GSP.
I mean, I genuinely think he has that potential to reach that level. I loved that he came out to the post-fight press conference. He was in traditional African clothing, which was the first time we'd seen that. He clearly wants to represent the continent where he's from. He's from Cameroon. I mean, part of why, for what it's worth, is my sister lives in Africa and has been there for a long time, and I've gone to visit, and I love the continent. She's not in Cameroon. But
and then you see guys like Usman moving up as well. Like, Usman could be a couple wins away for a title shot, no problem.
Exactly. So
if anybody agrees to fight him.
And I asked Dana, if anyone, that's a big question. Yeah. I'm shocked I think a lot of guys thought this Overeem fight was going to be the big test for Ngannou, and he just passed with flying colors, and it was incredible. And I really, really believe the fact that he's French, the fact that he does carry himself, he's a gentleman. Yes, he told Overeem that he was going to go to sleep, but that's as far as we can tell, that's the only trash talk he's ever done. And you're going to go to sleep is not that intense in the grand scheme of things in the UFC trash talk. And look, he's got a fight. I don't know. This is we've kind of joked about this. That type of power, that type of speed, that type of boxing technique, you're going to get hit when you're fighting him.
Yeah.
So, it seems to me like the only thing you can do is try to knock him out before he knocks you out. Or take him down.
Yeah, which Stipe can do.
Yes.
And I mean, Stipe's boxing is good, but Stipe's chin's been tested too. I mean, we saw him. He got dropped by JDS, got knocked out by Struve. He got, did he get knocked out by Struve or dropped and then choked? I can't remember. I can't remember if he got subbed.
I honestly don't remember that fight. That's such
a long
weird...
time ago. It's a long time ago.
And that's a big
And he got dropped by Overeem in the first round.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, we've seen Stipe's chin get tested and fail him at times.
Yeah. And I hope
For Ngannou, it only needs to fail you once because you're not getting up if he hits you. If he hits you flush, you're done.
And I know you pretty much agree with this. There's going to be a temptation because we're all so excited by what Francis can do to almost downplay what Stipe can do.
And I don't think we should do that.
I don't. Stipe
is one of the most well-rounded guys in the UFC, and he's a heavyweight.
Like, frankly, he's still the best heavyweight on the planet until he gets beat. Yeah.
If he wins, he's the best ever in the UFC.
100%.
I mean, three title defenses, the most ever, which for heavyweight, which is kind of a funny stat. But, if he beat Ngannou right now, the way that he's been looking, I mean, this is a win-win for the UFC.
This is, and I genuinely, I don't know if right now this is the biggest fight in the promotion, because I don't think necessarily Stipe, they haven't managed to properly market him.
It doesn't help that he's in contract negotiations for almost a year.
That's true.
Or half a year. But that being said, I think that the UFC played it well. It's like, well, we'll negotiate with you, but if this Ngannou guy wins, we'll give you what you want, but...
you have to fight.
This is the fight.
Terrorizing.
Because, if Alistair Overeem beats Ngannou and you've got a rematch between Ngannou and Stipe, you've seen the numbers. You know what that's going to look like on paper, and you've seen that fight.
Yeah.
So suddenly the leverage for Stipe goes way down. So I think it worked out well for both parties. I think Stipe probably gets the payday he wanted, but it comes at a price of having to fight this mammoth individual who is taking heads off.
Yeah, and with Stipe, with that contract negotiation, You know, when I talked to him about it, he basically, he didn't give me a number that he demanded. He just said he's the champion and is getting paid less than his opponents.
Yeah.
And he won't do that anymore. And
right.
That's totally valid.
Yeah,
you know,
very valid.
Sometimes there's no bad guy in some of these stories. Yeah. It's just
right.
Negotiations.
And I mean, it doesn't help that his last two opponents are guys that are longtime veterans of the sport coming from another organization, and that usually costs more money. And
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of a product of a circumstance. But at the same time, he does have a valid point. With Ngannou, though, this fight's in like a month and a half. So to me, I thought what they should have done is held it off till March, do it in Vegas, make it big. Now they've only got a month and a half to promote it. Do you think that that's going to be enough time to really hammer home what we've got here with Francis?
I don't. I mean, I honestly believe that March plan would have been perfect. I think that with the holiday season coming up, with, you know, you've got in the middle of January, people are focused on the NFL. They're focused on college football until then. Yeah, it's a little bit. I think it's going to be tough for them.
And they're also going head to head with Bellator, who's got a pretty good card that night. And I mean, it's not a big deal. But
is that the Rory McDonald card? Yeah. So.
And there's I think, is that the one that has Mir Fedor? There's like a big head, or it's Mitrione and who's Mitrione fighting in that tournament? King Mo? No, I don't know. Mitrione's fight is that
one of the heavyweight tournament fights.
One of the heavyweight tournament fights. So they're which
all
is a good free TV fight.
Yeah. That being said, I mean, with a UFC card that has
Mitrione Nelson, sorry, continue.
Okay. that has Ngannou, Stipe, and then also Daniel Cormier fighting on the card. I mean, they shouldn't be worried about what Bellator is bringing
up. Right, I agree with you. And not to mention that if either Ngannou or Stipe wins and Cormier wins, you can set up a really big heavyweight fight. Because Cormier really, and you know, my friends on the MMA Analysis podcast said this, Cormier has the best path of anybody to beat Ngannou if Ngannou wins.
God, that would be a great fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you could, I mean, you know, have that where if Cormier wins his fight, he gets on the mic and says, whoever wins this heavyweight fight, I'm coming for you. Boom.
Boom. Get your big payday. I mean, Cormier doesn't have
that. And now you've got a backup fight for the summer if anything happens with Conor, if you can't get him in the cage. Yeah. Now you've got a little bit more leverage over him.
I love that.
Because, I mean, Cormier doesn't need to fight Gustafsson again. There's nobody else at light heavyweight waiting in the wings that I can think of that's.
I mean, look. You're interviewing. You've got a Misha interview later in the podcast, I believe.
Yeah.
I love Misha. He's not there yet.
He knows that.
Yeah. And I mean, the Volkan fight was the perfect example. So I'd love to see Gus Cormier again. I was there in Houston. That was an awesome fight. But no, you're right. He doesn't need to do it for any competitive reasons.
Yeah. I will say this though: if Misha wins against Glover, and Cormier wins and vacates the light heavyweight title. Mm-hmm. Misha's in the mix, man. Like, Misha could fight Gustafsson next for the title.
I mean, that's partially an indictment of the light heavyweight division
a little bit. Yeah, but that's like a good, you know, that's kind of, the stars would have to align, but that could happen.
Why not?
Not outside the realm of possibility. Glover's ranked third.
Yeah. And personally, I do think Misha's going to beat Glover. So, hey, that's a nice co-headliner for Montreal if they're going to Montreal in the spring.
Is that what you've been hearing?
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't heard that. That's interesting.
I mean, that's, like, to be clear, that's not. I've not been hearing that from anyone important.
Okay. have a connection with the Bell Center that have something in a date on hold?
Through a couple minor conversations, it's been hinted at to me, but
okay.
Let's not put that. That's
breaking
not,
news.
That
I'm tweeting it as we speak.
That is not a reporter going on record. That's just like casual conversation. People have sort of hinted that at
okay.
me.
That's cool. I like Montreal.
I'd love
to go back there. I'm dying to go back there.
And that's the thing. I mean, they haven't been back since
a long time ago.
Yeah, it would have been the Horiguchi Demetrius Johnson fight.
Yeah,
which that was a great card that fell apart. So sales weren't great or whatever. But if they have the fight, Montreal's still one of the
big shoes to fill for that Anderson Silva versus what was it, Thiago? who was it? That really awful main event. Talas Latis.
That was one of the worst fights of all time. yeah, but I mean, as for the January thing with Ngannou. There's a balancing act, right? Because obviously they want to ride the momentum that they've been building with this guy, and he just had a big win and the highlights. My thing is I want to see – and look, I want to be the one to do it. I want to bring cameras him to Cameroon. I want to – but
I mean, it could be done by then. But, although I'll say this. I learned again this week that Georges St-Pierre, when they announced he was coming back, his Twitter mentions were about like a seventh of what they were on Fight Week.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, Fight Week can build, like, when Fight Week rolls around, if the UFC does things properly, that can build a card alone.
Yeah.
That being said, Georges St-Pierre and Francis Ngannou are comparing apples to oranges. I mean, George has an established history in the sport, an entire country behind him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they can do in the span of a month. That being said, it, you know, as long, if Ngannou ends up winning, now you've got all the time in the world to market him. You know that he's a star, and you have all the time in the world to market him after that.
Absolutely.
And so, that's... I mean, again, I would have personally put it in March. Mm-hmm. That being said, if you have a main, like a big fight you can put on in January, Ngannou didn't get touched in that fight. I don't know how many strikes were landed. I should look it up, but I'd be surprised if it was more than four. Yeah. That he absorbed in that fight.
And I guess all I was thinking was more like, you think about that documentary that Michelle Waterson was right. in, where LeBron yeah. tweets it out and it gets...
Well, there's a reason for that, though.
Yes.
It was on Uninterrupted, which is his website.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why LeBron tweeted it out. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was a documentary. Actually, a friend of mine, Sean Menard, who I used to work with at The Score, directed it. And he works for Uninterrupted. He actually did the Vince Carter... Did you see the Vince Carter yeah. documentary? That was also for Uninterrupted that he did.
That's awesome. Okay.
So he's... Yeah, he...
Talented guy.
Yeah, he's mm-hmm. a very talented guy. Does documentaries. But Uninterrupted is owned by LeBron James.
Yes. I knew it was owned by him. I didn't make that connection, yeah. though. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And you never know. Kobe...
But hey, maybe he yeah. goes to Cameroon. Maybe yeah. Sean Menard goes into Cameroon.
And I just think that's the type of thing that builds... You know, my mom watches that documentary and wants to watch Ngannou or Waterson fight. And, you know, I do think that, like... There's that extra promotional stuff that's not just the UFC saying.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like the mind of GSP that TSN did.
Exactly.
Did big numbers.
Great job.
And I mean, I think that a lot of the success of that card in Canada, you know, had to do with how much we covered that fight.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. You guys did a great job with that. So, yeah, that's just what I want for Ngannou. That's what I want for the Stipe fight, which I just think is so fun.
It's the biggest heavyweight fight in like 4 years since the Fox deal started, and they had the one on free TV, the Kane and JDS fight, which lasted a matter of seconds.
Yeah, and I mean, even I think this has the potential to be bigger. I think this is the biggest since Brock, personally. Although Kane had that momentum, I forget, you know, out of context.
Kane JDS at that time was a massive fight.
Yeah, unbelievable that was on Fox.
Mm-hmm. It was on Fox with the debut of them on Fox, and I think it did 8 million viewers.
Wow.
Yeah, which is crazy in hindsight. It's a lot of viewers.
That's the thing. If Francis wins, then suddenly you can do Francis Kane.
Yeah.
If Kane ever is.
And Francis said his dream match was Brock, but I'd be shocked if he's seen Brock fight more than once.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just managers telling him to say that because and I personally think he would murder Brock. Like I think
that would not even be would be a minute.
But
and a half.
That being said, like in wrestling, you got wrestling and you got
I know. I mean, Brock's Brock. Like,
yeah.
I kind of roll my eyes at all the Brock talk because he didn't look that good against Markhand.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You know what, though? I think he did. I think he did look that good against Markhand. Given the layoff, given how dominant he was in that fight, I'm going to disagree with you there.
Okay. I mean, the layoff is a big caveat.
Yeah. But not only is it a layoff, he's also doing pro wrestling, which takes a toll on your body.
Fair enough. Yeah.
And for him to just jump back in.
I'm probably coming from my own personal resentment towards just Brock because he popped, and I hate that. So, he looked fine.
Yeah, whatever. You know, when I talk to Misha Sirkinov later on, you'll hear a lot about that because he loves USADA. He's like the biggest advocate for USADA that I've ever heard.
I bet, eh?
I interviewed him yesterday. If you go to tsn.ca/UFC/video, you can see my interview with Misha where he basically called John Jones a cheater. He said, John Jones, he basically said, I'm convinced he's a cheater. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire. It's two tests in a row. I just don't buy it anymore. Like, they can defend him however they want. But, he's basically, I trust the system and I trust the process that he compared it basically to, you know, he was telling me this actually off air, but well, actually maybe not. Maybe it was on air. That USADA's like parents. Actually, it's in the interview that's coming up on the podcast. That USADA are like parents. Mm-hmm. Put any of their kids, they don't favor any of their kids. You know, like you have, if you do this, you get punished the same as if this kid did it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was an interesting analogy. But he's pretty convinced that John is guilty and he doesn't really want to see John back in the sport for a while.
I mean, just as a reporter, I can't really come out and offer an opinion on that. But I mean, yeah, look, the guy popped twice.
I mean, we know what we know.
We know.
And Misha kind of prefaced it with that. It's like, you know, I we'll see how it plays out. But from what I can see right now,
He
failed two tests in a row.
Yeah, and
I'm surprised, really. Like, if they find out that, you know, if he ends up being guilty here, like there could be legal action taken. I mean,
there almost always should be legal action taken if one fighter's cheating and the other's not. You know, I do think it's criminal.
Yeah.
So this is a sport where you know there's a lot of damage done, and you know.
Right. I mean, Daniel Cormier got, you know, basically shin to chin knocked out. In devastating fashion.
Yeah, he may never be the same fighter, and you know that takes away his ability to make more money.
We'll know in a month and a half.
Yeah, I know.
Jeez. I mean, Ozdemir's a killer.
I know.
You know, and I kind of and I mentioned this to Misha also on the interview you can see on our website. you know, I said, like, knowing what we know now about Ozdemir, that loss doesn't look all that bad in hindsight. And he's like, well, you know, a loss is a loss. I didn't want to lose, but, you know, you're right. You know, it.
I mean, yeah. He still refers to it as a loss, eh?
Who, Misha?
No. Sorry. You're saying Misha.
Yeah, Misha.
Oh, yeah. Well, that.
No, I'm talking about the Ozdemir loss. Yeah, Misha losing to Ozdemir.
Yeah, Misha still. He made some weird mistakes in that fight, though.
And he admits that.
Yeah.
He admits that. And he really wants a rematch with Ozdemir. You'll hear this later on in the podcast.
Perfect.
As you can tell, I've already spoken to him. And I don't play any games with that kind of thing.
I don't know. I mean, that's the beauty of editing.
Yeah. So UFC 218, it seems like it was like a month ago because of all the news that's broken since then. You know, we were kind of talking about this off air about the news cycle. The UFC, one of the selling points you can make if you're trying to get a TV deal done is like there's like a year-round news cycle now with the UFC. Like you can have news almost every day in the sport.
I mean, I genuinely think that sort of a UFC style or UFC Tonight style, which they do on Wednesday nights, I honestly think that could be 3-4 days a week. There is, I mean, you know, I'm supposed to, for the newspapers, write sort of 3 times a week. And inevitably, I end up writing 5 to 6 times. Just something comes up that, you know, a main card main event gets changed or, you know, George vacates the belt and it's 9 o'clock on a Thursday night. And yeah, I mean, they have 100% made this be a 365-day-a-year sport.
Yeah.
And the fighters deserve credit for that because they use social media to, you know, push all this stuff. And there's a ton going on. But it's unbelievable that we're preparing for another fight night tomorrow.
And it seems like Cyborg versus Holm is almost an afterthought now with this Ngannou announcement. Like, it's like I'm salivating for that fight. But, I mean, I still think Cyborg-Holm is going to be a great fight. Yeah, there's a card in Fresno this Saturday. I mean, the combat sports world this weekend is crazy. You've got the Glory pay-per-view. Yeah. You've got Lomachenko-Rigondo in boxing. You've got I think there's a Bellator card. Yeah, there's the Bellator card in Italy, which has a middleweight title fight. Can you tell me who's fighting in the middleweight title?
Aaron, don't do this to me. I don't know.
Okay. I'll give you a hint. One guy's a former UFC guy. Who's fighting for the title?
Former UFC guy.
The fight's in Italy.
Well, it's not Musasi. Middleweight. Just help me out with this.
Alessio Zaccaro is fighting for the title, yes. Yes, I don't blame you for not knowing
that. I forgot he existed.
Against their champion at middleweight, who is?
I don't want
Rafael Carvalho. Good luck to you.
CFL and I know everything.
good luck to you. Yeah, name the three receivers from the Stampeders that line up on their first line. That you could do. I'm sure quite easily. So that's happening this weekend. And then you've got the Fresno card, which has a really good main event.
Yeah.
But first, let's talk about UFC 218. It was just this past weekend, again, shockingly. What stood out to you? I mean, really, it was a fantastic card. I feel really bad for Henry Cejudo for having to follow Alvarez versus Gaethje. And really a nice dominant performance for him over Sergio Pettis that I think made a real statement in the flyweight division, but seems like almost an afterthought now.
Yeah, and I mean, I was actually really impressed. This is one of the things I couldn't fully articulate in print. I had trouble with it. It had been Grey Cup and then 218. It had been a long couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I loved that Cejudo came out, and instead of just calling for his title shot, sort of said, like, the best thing for the division is the TJ, Demetrius Johnson.
And said, if TJ wants TJ to have a fight first, I'll fight TJ.
Yeah, but he was very professional, and he is, in my mind, probably earned that shot
against
Demetrius.
Sure. He's got to be the number one guy now. I mean, no disrespect to Joe Benavidez, who's still rehabbing. I think you'll see him probably midway through next year. But a lot of people thought Cejudo won that fight, and Cejudo's won 2 fights since then. So I think he kind of skips the queue. I mean, right now, if you look at the rankings, Benavidez is still ranked ahead of him, which I think is, I mean, the rankings are a conversation for another day.
Oh, yeah, let's not do that.
Yeah, we'll be here all day.
But, I mean, yeah, and Benavidez, unfortunately, just, you know, he's fought DJ twice. They're probably not doing it a third time.
Yeah.
As much as, you know, I sometimes hate that rule, and this is one of those cases.
Well, I mean, they could. It's just Benavidez needs a couple more wins, I would think. Like, one win over Cejudo a year and a half ago is not going to do it in a close, like, a hotly contested fight.
Yeah, but doesn't Benavidez have, like, 5-6 wins in a row
something
right
like
now?
That. Since the law, yeah, probably.
Yeah, I mean, he's put together a good run.
Yeah, that's true.
But, I mean, outside of, you know, them needing to do a short notice fight.
Well, he was supposed to fight Ben Wynn in Australia back when he had his injury. Like, you could reschedule if he's ready for UFC 221. I don't know if he is, but that would be a great fight. Ben Wynn's on a tear also.
Yeah.
He's kind of the dark horse in that
not
division.
Not talked about at all.
No, not talked about at all. And I'm sure he'll be fighting on that Australia card.
Yeah, he better be.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I was really impressed with Cejudo. As you said, it's just one of those things. And even Dana acknowledged it, that he was, like, at that level, those guys are fighting, you know, for more than some of these guys who are just coming in and looking to bang.
Yeah.
And Dana, I mean, I was impressed as Dana was. I mean, he went in and he fought the good, smart fight, and it was dominant.
Yeah, when I spoke to Cejudo afterwards, he goes like, Yeah, like, I did really well against Hayes on the feet, but, like, when Sergio's striking with me, the smart thing to do is go to my wrestling. I'm a gold medalist. It's like, yeah, you are. You should. Absolutely.
And he hasn't done it for a while. I do think he was rushed into the initial DJ fight a little bit, which is sort of a theme of DJ's career as champion.
He just had wiped out the division, and he just happened to be the next guy sitting there.
And it was
the
same thing with
Horiguchi. And he was a gold medalist. It's marketable.
Exactly. And it was the same thing with Horiguchi. Yeah. He was a guy who I thought, if you'd given Horiguchi three or four more fights.
They really should have hung on to him.
I know.
I mean, in terms of the free agents that they've let walk, he's like a big one. And I think two other guys, like Albert Tumanov, they let walk, I believe. And Rory McDonald, obviously, I think they should have tried to hang
with
on
Rory,
to him.
There were questions about his nose at the time. I understand that.
Well, he also got paid a ton of money. Like, you have to match that contract and then some, and then say, like, we're going to give you a title fight. You know, like, there's a lot that goes into these contracts.
Yeah.
Like, with Alvarez, the reason Alvarez got his title shot against Dos Anjos, I believe, was because it was, like, part of the deal or something.
Was it, eh?
Yeah, something along those lines. Well, like, because Bellator, I think he had a clause in his contract. Maybe not Alvarez. I don't remember who it was. There was somebody in Bellator that came in that got a title shot pretty quickly, if I'm not mistaken.
It would have to be Eddie, to be honest. I'm sure we're going to talk about that fight. But, Cejudo, super impressive. I mean, up and down the card, it was just a really fun night of fights, and I'm not even going to mention the Detroit Free Press right now.
If you want to, you can. I have no interest in talking about it just because, like, I'm one of these guys that's not offended by it.
I think, wasn't offended. I knew what he was doing.
It's a bit of a clickbait, but at the same time, it's also like, if you just show you don't know anything about the sport, and I don't think we should be offended by that and really give it the time of day.
No, and I do think MMA fans, I include myself in this at times, we are overly sensitive, and if a columnist...
We shouldn't be.
I know, and we should enjoy our sport and, that...
Yeah, let people criticize it.
It's not my job to pump it out.
Let people criticize it, yeah. Let people criticize it if they want to. I've said this to somebody yesterday. Like, the big difference between the UFC and the NHL, the NBA, and, soccer or whatever, the NHL, at its base, let's go to the very base of the sport, is you take a stick and you take a rubber puck and you try to hit it into a net.
Yes.
In soccer, you kick a ball into a net. In basketball, you put a ball into a net. In the UFC, you try to stop another human being physically by either making them submit, knocking them out, or besting them in a combat competition.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't get past that, because there are people that can't get past that hockey's on ice. Like, I'm not going to watch that. I live in Arizona. I don't want to watch the sport that's on ice. It's cold in the arena. If you can't get past that, you're never going to like the sport. So if you can't get past the fact that somebody's going to get punched in the face at some point, and somebody's going to get knocked out on any card, really, every card probably has a knockout. I wouldn't say every, but 98% of cards have a knockout. Mm-hmm. You're not going to enjoy the sport ever. You're not going to be able to see the beauty of it that comes from what the sport is.
Yeah,
the technical.
If your starting point is violence is bad and I don't like violence.
Yeah, you're never going to like it. My wife will never like the sport. The only fight my wife liked, actually, is the aforementioned Silva versus Leitas fight, because there was, like, no strike. She was like, oh, I understand what they're, like, I was like, here's what they're doing. Here's why this is happening.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, that's interesting. And then, like, she sees a knock and she's like, ah, it's like, seeing a car accident.
Yeah. And I mean,
and I told her recently, after I got back from UFC 218, I was like, yeah, there was some of the athletes got transported to the hospital. She was like, they got transported to the hospital? I'm like, yeah, it happens at every event. She's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, well, if you can't get past that, you're never going to see the beauty of the sport.
No, and I mean, I'm someone who, if I'm out and walking past a bar and there's a bar fight, like, I turn away. Like,
yeah,
I actually,
I'm not bringing my camera phone out. I'm getting out of there because I don't want to end up in it.
Yeah, and I actually find it, like, viscerally disturbing to watch street violence. But I find that the sanctioned, version I love and I find fascinating, and there's more to dig into in fighting than just about any sport.
Yeah, you can get past the very core of the sport.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, as much as I admire the sacrifices that the fighters are putting in, and this is going to lead into Eddie and Gaethje, I'm almost not, because I know there are doctors there, because I know that, I mean, I don't have that reaction to it at all that's like, oh, God, these people are hitting each other in the face. Like, it's a sport for me. It's not a fight, although it is. But, that goes into Gaethje and Alvarez, and that was one of the most spectacular things I've ever seen.
Like, oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, I do not know how Gaethje... Like, you punch me in the face once, I'm down.
Yeah.
That man was taking so much punishment.
Yeah, that was zombie mode, really. And he kept getting up. And
it is crazy. It is such a shame to me that Eddie Alvarez, most fans, we'll know Eddie Alvarez is the guy who got dominated by Conor McGregor.
Yeah, and same with Aldo, really. I mean, Aldo's, if you've seen what's happened with Aldo since then, it's like losing to Holloway twice. It's like now his people are going to forget how amazing he was, like that knockout over Swanson, all the WEC thing. Like when he first got started in the WEC, he was like appointment television. He was destroying guys.
Oh, he's on the Mount Rushmore for me, the MMA. Like he's one of the five greatest fighters ever. But unfortunately, I mean, as you just said, I mean, the Conor McGregor promotion and then leading into these two Holloway fights, that's what people are going to, new fans of the sport, are not ever going to be able to go back and realize how big it was that he,
you know, and you can say the same thing kind of in hindsight with Ronda. But I think that Aldo was a lot more well-rounded and, you know, he was facing better competition, more established competition, because women's MMA when Ronda was dominating was not what it is now.
Yeah. And, I mean, what Max did in that fight was absolutely incredible. I mean, Luke Thomas
both
from
fights,
MMA
really.
Fighting has broken it down.
And yeah.
Just, like, the switches that he did. And those fights looked very similar, just if on the surface, right?
You know what it felt like? You know when you play a video game and you beat the game, it takes you a long time to beat the game? Second time, it's much easier to beat the game.
Yeah.
And that's what it looked like for Holloway.
Exactly.
And it was similar to TJ and Brow. Like, I was backstage with Robin Black, and he mentioned TJ and Brow. And I was like, yeah, that's what this is. This is TJ Brow, too.
Yeah. Holloway the entire time looked like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He was, other than that one uppercut, I mean, he was willing to stand in front of him. He knew he could dodge his punches, and he knew that eventually he was going to break him down. And I mean, that was just such an amazing performance.
Absolutely.
Obviously, Ngannou was the knockout of the year. The Waterson Torres fight was the only one that wasn't amazing on that card.
Well, and Cejudo Pettis, I mean.
Yeah, but I mean,
I thought it was a great fight. And I thought Torres versus Waterson was a great fight. I thought it was a much more action-packed fight than Tisha Torres is used to providing us with.
Yeah, it was weird one to lead off the pay-per-view. Yeah. I think that was part of it. We had come off, there had been some really exciting fights on the undercard.
Yeah, Felder Oliveira was great. I mean, I said to Paul Felder, you spent a round swimming with the sharks, and then you spent the second round elbowing the shark in the face.
Yeah.
Like, that's what that fight was. Because he hung with Oliveira on the ground, and that is, like, nobody has done that before, really.
That was a remarkable performance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not only hung with him, I mean, I think he won the first round. I mean,
no.
Did he not?
No,
that?
I don't think so.
Didn't he get out with 2 minutes left and kind of dominate the last two?
I don't know. I thought Oliveira put him into several tough spots in that first round.
I haven't watched it since. Yeah. I watched it live and was impressed.
I mean, I can go back and look at how the judges scored it, but I personally thought that it was a, you know.
Fair enough. You know,
you might be right. I can't remember.
Let's be clear.
So much is going on.
I watch it on fight night. There's so much going on.
I'm backstage, so I'm getting my attention's being diverted left and right by
things.
And
it's possible that he survived and I was impressed, so the way that my memory works.
And Medeiros Oliveira was unbelievable.
Unbelievable
fight. Herrig versus Casey was a fun fight, too. I liked that fight. I thought that was a good fight. And Tamir versus Closo was a good fight, too.
Sometimes you got to flick a bloody booger.
Yeah, exactly.
I can take booger.
Yeah, booger. Come on. I should beep it just for fun. And even the prelim card was, like, the Fight Pass card had a lot of good moments, too. Just top to bottom. I mean, really, 217 and 218 are just like, wow, the sport's hitting its stride right now.
2017 is rounding out well. The UFC came in for a lot of criticism early in the year. And I mean, what were they going to do? They just didn't have the healthy champions available.
Yeah, and there was also a lot of circumstance, like people in main and co-main event missing weight and not showing up to the scale. And like, you just can't get around that.
Exactly. But I do think that, I mean, just the fourth quarter for sure. The summer is kind of, you know,
well, the summer, if you count the Conor and Floyd fight as part of the UFC microcosm, now you're talking about a great summer, you know.
And 214, we were just John Jones's test, alleged positive, whatever.
It puts a real, it really makes it so much less memorable.
Exactly.
It was a great card, but when you think back to that, you almost feel like you feel really bad for DC.
Yeah.
You know, it leaves a really bad taste in your mouth about that card as a whole. And but you've also got to remember there was Woodley Maya was on that card, too, and that was it wasn't the most interesting fight, but Woodley did shut down Maya's offense. The problem with that in hindsight now is after seeing Covington versus Maya, Covington put a beating on Maya.
Yeah.
Whereas Woodley was just playing it safe.
Yeah, I mean, I think Covington stole from Woodley's playbook a little bit.
People say that, but I don't know about that, because when you think about what Covington is, he's a Division I All-American. Those guys don't get taken down very easily by someone like Maya. It's just a bad. Anytime Maya is facing a really high level wrestler, he's in big trouble.
Okay, fair enough. I hate Covington, so
I think you're just piling on him.
He piled on himself personally. But yeah, I mean, no, that 214 would have been, and that's my memory of that night is walking away and being like, wow, John Jones has come back to save the sport from a really rough start to the year. And then it all, you know, went to whatever. I don't know what the word is, but yeah. It turned out terribly. So really, I mean, November and December, and as you said, I think this Holly Holm Cyborg fight is terrific, and I think Holly Holm is a better chance than people are.
Yeah,
are giving
her. She's like a more than 3-1 underdog, I think, at this point. And
yeah,
I mean, from a tactical standpoint, she's got a shot.
Yeah,
but that being said, she's gonna be really undersized compared to Cyborg, I think, and that could be a problem. But that said, Cyborg didn't look super impressive against Evinger, and Holm is a much better fighter than Evinger.
And I think like Holly will be able to stay out of the way from those big punches early. She's gonna get swarmed. I mean, Cyborg's gonna do what Cyborg does.
Yeah, and Holly hasn't been finished with strikes in MMA, right? So that's something to remember.
Yeah, and you know what?
And if Holm does end up winning, now suddenly you've got a Nunes-Holm super fight that you can set up. And,
yeah, that's true.
You know, that's...
It's unbelievable that fight's never happened.
Yeah, it's the only challenger that Nunes hasn't beaten in that division that's... other than, like, Ketlin Vieira, but, and you know, that she really hasn't fought.
Yeah. That's... it's bizarre. Like, I know that fight hasn't happened, but in my head, it's just like, it should have. Like, how is it not? So, yeah, that would be awesome. I mean, I don't think she... I can't pick her to win, but I do 3-1 underdog. That to me is ridiculous.
Yeah, this is might even be more at this point.
Yeah. I mean, she doesn't really get hit. And
what else is on that card? I'm going to look that up because I feel like I'm forgetting some big fights on that card.
Which
There was supposed to be Cruz Rivera, which would have been nice, but Dominic got injured again, unfortunately. I love watching Dominic fight. It's really actually makes me sad that he's not on that card. Actually, that could be Barboza. I'm just remembering. That's going to be a great fight.
That's going to be a great fight.
That's the co-main event. Yeah, Jimmy Rivera, John Lineker. If you're going to replace TJ Dillashaw with anybody, that's going to make that fight exciting.
Which is crazy.
And even Calvillo Esparza is a good fight. Condit's on the card. Like that's and Kamaru Usman might be on the card. Probably not. But
who's Condit fighting?
Condit's fighting Neil Magny.
Yeah, that's
a good fight.
Yep.
Mark Diakiti's on the card. Like there are good fighters on that card.
Yeah. It's a little bit weird.
But it took a hit because Cruz dropped off, Gokhan Saki dropped off, so and now Usman's probably off, so that card could have been a lot more stacked than it is.
And it's just in context, we know that the end of December card is supposed to be one of the biggest ones of the year.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's not, let's be plain with that, it's some great fights, but it's not going to rival what 214 was supposed to be, or it's clearly 217.
Yeah.
So I get fans being a little bit disappointed. I also think, like, you're not going out the night before New Year's, so, you know, probably not. I think it's good enough to merit a watch, for sure, if I'm a casual fan.
Yeah, for sure. I think so, too, especially if you want to go to the bar right before New Year's. Should be fun.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk to our next guest, Misha Cirkunov. He's going to be fighting the third-ranked light heavyweight, Glover Teixeira, not this weekend, but the weekend after in Winnipeg. It's the last network card of the year, UFC on Fox. In Canada, it's on CTV2, as well as TSN5. Here he is, Misha Cirkunov joins me in studio.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to introduce this week's guest.
Joined now in studio by Misha Cirkunov, the 7th-ranked UFC light heavyweight, the highest-ranked Canadian outside of George St. Pierre in the UFC, and he'll be taking on the 3rd-ranked Glover Teixeira in Winnipeg, December the 16th. It's going to air on CTV2 as well as TSN5, and we're looking forward to watching a great card with a lot of Canadians. And, of course, having Misha here is fantastic. Misha, everything going well?
Yeah, everything going well. Thanks for having me, and very excited. Been doing a lot of work, a lot of training, preparation for December 16th. Feeling great, and counting down the days and ready to go to work.
So you went from cold Toronto to really warm Thailand, you were telling me. You were training out there with Tiger Shulman, is that right?
Yeah, it was early. It was like just right after kind of August. It was
so it's still hot here then.
Yeah, it was still warm here, and so we went down there, trained there for like a month. But it was really hard to get used to. You know, it was really hot and humid. You know, which I'm not used to the environment, especially training twice a day in that kind of environment. It was really, really tough. But then my fight got rescheduled because originally I was supposed to fight in Brazil, so that's why I was training in a also hot environment, just getting used to a little bit similar climate to Brazil. And then they rescheduled the fight to December 16th in Winnipeg, and it's a lot colder in Winnipeg. So, you know, I changed the environment, came back to Canada, and been training for the last 2 months here.
You should have gone and trained in Alaska to acclimatize for Winnipeg at that time of year.
Yeah, Winnipeg, I heard, is quite cold right now. with the windshield is, I heard it's like over like minus 25 or something. So definitely got to be dressed accordingly to the weather.
Yeah, we sent Robin Black for TSN to cover that one. He's from there, so he can handle that.
Oh, perfect, perfect.
Whereas I don't want to handle that.
Yeah.
But he's going to be there, and we're going to have a lot of coverage on TSN for this this particular event.
But
the main thing,
as long as you dress properly, that's all that matters, you know? That's proper layers, you'll be good.
That's true. You know, I'm always like the last guy to start wearing socks and a winter jacket when the winter comes. Yeah. I hate letting go of like fall and summer.
Yeah, you know, this year, the first time when I used to be the same way as you. But now I changed it. So I think I was one of the first people on the street with a winter jacket on.
It's like September?
Pretty much, yeah. And I felt great. You know, people look at me like, you know, something is wrong with me, but I was warm at the same time.
So you mentioned that the fight was supposed to be in October in his backyard in Brazil. Now it's in your backyard in Canada here in December. Were you a little bit disappointed to hear about the date change? Were you looking to get that fight under your belt in October, or... It is what it is.
You know, it's unfortunate that it took a little bit longer, but it worked out perfect because I'd rather fight in Canada, and the dates worked out even better. Fighting in December, you know, end of the year, finish the fight, you know, and then you have like solid, you know, 2-3 weeks to enjoy the holidays. I think the timing worked out perfect and gave me more time to get even better and train harder and, you know. Plus, you know, fighting in Canada, you know, I'll be able to make a little bit more money. You know, I don't have to pay tax in Brazil as well, which another benefit.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, everything worked out perfect. And, yeah, the training was perfect. Now I just have to go and put it all together that night.
Does placement on a card matter to you? Because to me, I think your fight is better than the co-main event. I know Jose Aldo left the card. He just lost this past weekend in Detroit in the rematch with Holloway. And Lamas is fighting Josh Emmett. But to me, on paper, you know, Misha Cirkunov in Canada fighting against Glover Teixeira, a top three ranked guy, is a better co-main event. Does that matter to you, or is that something that they approach you about, or does it just happen how it happens?
You know what? I'm not sure exactly like how it all gets organized. But, you know, it is what it is. To me personally, I would mind if they put me right just to open up the night. Like, they can put me at 5 o'clock there, you know. They can put me in the prelims, you know, whatever it is. Like, I will fight, I'll put a great fight, and I'll fight whoever is in front of me, and I'll entertain whoever is sitting in the audience, you know. Every single time I fought, the crowd went extremely wild, and I promise you it's going to be no different on December 16th, and it's going to be just very exciting, entertaining fight. But the placement... I prefer the sooner the better. I prefer just going in and fighting instead of sitting and waiting for all the guys to dirty up the cage, you know?
Now, Glover's a tough matchup. I mean, he can do a little bit of everything just like you can. Is there any specific area where you think you have a pretty marked advantage over him?
You know, it's interesting because from seeing how he fights, he's kind of like, you know, he's pretty versatile and he's pretty good everywhere. So he's like a true veteran. He's a complete fighter, you know. So I don't really see that many holes in his game. If anything, if there is one, it's his strength and his disadvantage, that's his age. So which means, you know, he's older than me. He has more experience than me. He had more fights than me. He's been in bigger fights than I was. But at the same time, that's like also extra mileage on the car, on a race car. There's only can be certain amount of kilometers, for example, right? So he fought for a long time, which gives him good experience, but also puts extra kind of like a wear and tear on the body. So if there is a disadvantage, I would kind of look at that, like realistically. Other than that, he's, you know, he's very complete, very tough fighter. And, you know, he's a good guy. I met him in Sweden. Very humble, very, you know, easygoing, and you can tell he's a hard worker. And it's not going to be an easy fight.
Well, I mean, you mentioned the mileage. That fight with Gustafsson probably put a lot of miles on him. I mean, that was a very, very tough, tough fight and a tough loss for him. I think he lost in the fifth round of that fight, and
yeah.
I don't know if he won a round of that fight. That was an incredible light heavyweight fight. But I mean, that fight pretty much was close to the amount of cage time you've had in the UFC in that one fight.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've been the only one time in UFC I went into a third round and I was able to get like a stoppage in the third, but usually my fights they end either in the first or a couple times at the time it was in the second. But he fought all five rounds and he lost in the fifth round, but you know, it just shows that if there were six rounds, I'm pretty sure he'll be able to fight six rounds. If there's seven rounds, I'm sure he'll be able to fight seven rounds. So it just shows durability, experience, and that's why he's there. That's why he's, a top five, he's top three kind of fighter in the world. That's why he's there, and that's why it's a tough fight. But here I am, slowly earn my way, and I'll do my best to beat him.
Now, in your last fight with Ozdemir, I remember seeing afterwards on Twitter, people were like, what happened there? It looked like you just kind of dropped and that the shot was a glancing shot. And then he goes and does the same thing to Manuwa. And people are like, oh, okay, well, this is what this guy does. Hits guys in good spots that will drop them. Obviously, when you're actually in the cage with him, you don't see it coming. When you go back and watch the replay, I imagine you have. What did you notice from that you learned from it?
So basically, at first, I was really kind of like, really mad and, upset about all that. But after seeing the replay over and over and analyzing and, thinking and studying the footage and seeing exactly what happened, it's one of those, one of those spots where, for example, I'm more of a ground guy. And if I take you down and take you back and I start doing ground and pound, there are certain areas where you're not allowed to hit in a fight, mm-hmm. Once I'm on your back.
Yeah.
And I will get a warning. Unfortunately, once you're standing on your feet, sometimes in a big exchange, sometimes it's pretty much almost impossible for a judge to see it. And for the person who's applying those punches, he's just trying to hit your head. So, you can't really dictate exactly where the punches are going. But I do think that it was like, one of those shots that I don't think he'll be able to land it again. And, as upset as I get, all I care about now is finding my way back up and rematching him one day.
So you think that was a borderline illegal strike?
I think that the strike could be questions in terms of, I didn't even see the punch and it was kind of like behind the ear, so he obviously won the fight and he did amazing and he was able to stop me and all that. It's just all I'm saying is that in my opinion, we didn't even fight yet. It happened in 28 seconds. We didn't even, there was no that many exchanges. It was not like a fight, I wasn't even sweating there. Like I did lose, but I would love to redo it again, basically.
Yeah, I find it interesting because a lot of the times when someone loses quickly like that, people are more hesitant to give a rematch. But really, that's where a rematch is almost more warranted than if you lose 5 out of 5 rounds.
100%. I 100% agree with you. And, unfortunately, sometimes, accidents do happen. And if you watch all my fights before, you can tell it, none of that, never happened, even other guys even had a hard time landing a clean shot on me, and here it happened really, really quick. And just, I would love to get a rematch, nobody even asked me about any of that, but I would love to redo it again. And here I am, I'm climbing my way back to be there and to be in that position and to showcase my skills again.
Well, you're in a position where it's not that far away. I mean, a win over Glover gets you right into that mix. You'd probably be one win away from a title shot, or you could end up getting a rematch with Ozdemir if he loses to Cormier. So, yeah, that could be in sight, which would be great. I'm sure you're looking to avenge that one.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, I don't let any feelings go in there. I just work hard and then just work hard and let the cards play out. All I can do is just work hard and try to win my next fight.
And the division's kind of, moving on without John Jones. He's, been suspended once again. Do you think we'll see John Jones back next year? I've read in some places that they're confident that Jones will be in the cage again next year. But if this is indeed, registered as a second offense, even if they show that there's no negligence on his part, there probably should be a steeper penalty than that, correct?
You know, 100% agree with you. I don't, you know, there is certain rules. And for example, if you read the rules, you would think that if someone gets caught, they would get certain penalty. But then somehow things do get changed, and I don't know, like, if they get a lawyer. I don't know exactly how it works, but in my opinion, if you got caught, if you did something wrong, you should be punished for that, especially if that happened, you know, second time. Never mind if that happened third time. If that happened third time, that should be set as example. Because if someone, you know, does something wrong and they don't get ever punished for it, then what makes you think they'll stop doing that, you know, if they didn't do it for the third time? You know, I think that if you get charged with something, you have to pay the price. If you do the crime, you got to do the time. That's just how it works. And I think everyone should follow the rules, and there should be no example. There should be no, you know, I understand John Jones is a very, very good fighter, but he also got caught with many different things. So it's you know, those things don't work together. So that's why I don't understand how there's a talk that he'll still be fighting again. You know, usually I look at it like this. In Olympics, if they catch you for something, you're gone for 4 years. And that's on the first time they catch you for something. I can't even imagine Olympic athlete getting caught for something third time in a row, and there's still talks about him competing in next games. So to me, it's a little bit mind-blowing, but what do I know? We'll just see.
Yeah, I mean, well, you saw that seems to be, you know, changing the sport's history. When you look at Anderson Silva now and John Jones, you're seeing a lot of these guys that looked untouchable falling from grace, which
but
is tough to see.
You know what? I'm extremely helpful for USADA. I mean, those people are just, you know, they're amazing. They're basically, they're like parents watching out for us, you know? They're like parents in terms of, they make sure it's fair, you know? That's all they care about. It's like, imagine you got mistreated in school, and then, you know, your parent comes in, and they, you know, they're adult. They really see what's happening. They can talk, they can talk to a principal.
The parents
and
don't pick favorites.
They don't pick favorites. They just want to see what happened, you know? So the same, that's like USADA. They basically take your blood, they take your urine, they just put it under a microscope, and they let the, you know, the best lab, and they just see what's in you. They want to see what makes you so good, what makes you so great. Is it your natural ability, or is there something added, like a biological weapon inside of you, you know? And in this case, they're able to catch guys, and, you know, certain guys that we thought they're, you know, true legends and unbeatable and this and that, and we've seen that, you know, that was with a little help of something, you know. They're still the same people. They're still able to win fights. They're still amazing. But there was certain you know, certain stuff inside of them that make them that little bit better. And the rule says that you're not allowed to take that certain something. So, you know, there should be. Now that they're catching all the guys, it's amazing. It's good to see it. You know, I'm very, really happy for that. But now, now that they catch them, there should be certain kind of certain rule that if you're a cheater, you should be caught and you should be not being able to fight guys that don't do that kind of stuff. Because guys that don't do that kind of stuff, nobody talks about them. Nobody puts their name in the news every time they pass a test, and they pass a test. You know, nobody talks about it because, you know, that's a normal thing to do for a clean athlete, right? So nobody talks about it. But if, you know, you got caught and then next thing you know, you're back in the octagon and then you're making crazy money as it is and you're allowed to take biological weapon, I think that just something should be done like against that kind of thing, you know?
Absolutely. Well, that's all the time we have, unfortunately, Misha. But we're really looking forward to seeing you fight December the 16th in Winnipeg against Glover Teixeira. A huge fight for you, and hopefully that gets you right back up to the top of the division.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And guys, tune in December 16th. Don't miss this one.
That was Misha Cirkunov. You know, some pretty pointed comments about USADA and John Jones. It was great to hear from him. Also, interesting to hear his take on what happened in the Uzdemir fight. Basically said he was caught. He thought it was actually a borderline illegal strike because it hit him behind the ear. And he said that standing a referee, it's hard for a referee to see that, and he understood why it wasn't deemed an illegal strike. But then, you know, obviously, he didn't appeal it or anything. And he says he wants to fight Ozdemir again. He really wants that rematch. He was saying that he thinks, in the case of him, in the case of Aldo versus McGregor, it's not really a real fight when a guy gets stopped really early. It's kind of not a real indicator of how that fight could go if it went a little longer. And, I mean, he's got a bit of a valid point there. I think that it's a little bit more questionable than a guy that gets beaten pillar to post for five rounds. But at the same time, he acknowledges the loss under his belt. And I think that Glover's going to be an interesting matchup for him in Winnipeg. That's a real litmus test for where he's at in his career.
Yeah, I mean, it's an established veteran who has literally fought the best. I mean, I do think that Misha should beat Glover at this point. I mean, Glover's taken some damage over his last couple of fights. That amazing Gustafson finish.
Yeah. Well, he was mentioning in our interview all the miles that he has on him now.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think especially in that Gustafson fight, like five-round fights finished in the fifth round, took a beating.
Yeah. And, I mean, the Anthony Johnson knockout was just brutal.
Yep.
But at the same time, I mean, look, I like Glover a lot. He's a class act.
He earned his way to a title shot. He was one of these guys that came in with a crazy win streak into the UFC.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's a huge test, and I don't mean to take away from it. I do think, you know, again, that Volkan fight just stands out on his record because Misha's been incredible otherwise. I do think he's a future, if not champion. I mean, I think he could be a future champion, but he's definitely going to fight for a title at some point in his career.
Oh, wow, you're very confident in that. That's interesting.
I think he's elite, and I don't think that the light heavyweight division...
Well, I mean, it could be a product of his environment for sure. Yes. If he does end up getting a title shot. He's the highest-ranked Canadian outside of GSP. Actually, that was one thing I wanted to talk to you about that actually reminds me. How do you rank GSP after this week? Like, if you're doing the rankings in the UFC, like, what do you do? Is he unranked again? He was unranked before his title fight.
Can you keep him in the pound-for-pound rankings?
Can you keep him in the pound-for-pound? Can you keep him in the middleweight rankings? Like,
you can't keep him in the middleweight rankings.
You don't think so?
No.
Just won the middleweight title.
I guess he didn't say that he's never fighting
middleweight
again.
He's technically the number one contender, wouldn't you say? If you're bumping up Whittaker, the champion...
So if we're going by like what it says on the page, he's still a middleweight because he didn't
like,
say. I'm
if you
done
get
with
that ranking sheet, what do you do? Like I would be like, you know, I often rip the people that do the rankings because I think some of their rankings are way off base.
Yeah.
But like that, God, if I was doing the rankings this week, I wouldn't know what to do.
For me personally, and I'm trying to make sure that I can justify this, I would just keep him in pound for pound and take him out of middleweight.
Yeah, because people had him as the number one pound for pound fighter after that fight, which I also think is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's like a nice sign of respect for George, but he's fought once in 4 years.
Yeah,
and beat Michael
against Bisping. He now catapults Demetrius Johnson, who's been dominant for the last 6 years. How many years has he been the flyweight champion for? Who knows?
Well, and this goes back to what you're saying. Like, there's a level where in my head I don't need to be comparing George to Demetrius Johnson to any of these guys to T.J. Dillashaw. Like, I'm kind of okay with him just floating in his own sphere and me personally, and just kind of like. Jumping in where he's needed and taking big fights, and we have to see George versus this generation stars. And
yeah.
So I don't know that, like, I'm deeply uncomfortable with the idea of ranking him above any of these top pound-for-pound guys because I don't think he's actually
or the middleweights
or the middleweights. Yeah, yeah, no, take him out of the rankings. I don't
take
care.
Him out. Okay,
yeah, just give
well,
him
he's
his
not
own
retired.
Give him his own division.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it's like anomalies session. John Jones, GSP,
and Connor.
Yeah, and Ronda. Because Ronda's still like a top five women's bantamweight in the rankings, which makes sense.
So, yeah, I guess she's never formally
still active.
Retired. Yeah.
I forgot to ask Dana about that this week. Like, she hasn't been tested by USADA all year, but she's still in the pool. Like, that seems, again, George Orwell. Anyhow, UFC Fresno, you've got I think it's a solid, you know, card for free TV on a Fox Sports 1 card. Cub Swanson versus Ortega, I think, is a great fight, given that Ortega has never fought Max Holloway. If he has a dominant win over Cub Swanson, he could be the next guy.
Yeah, no asterisks. This is a great fight.
Yeah.
This is a capital G great fight.
Yeah.
I'm so high on Brian Ortega. I think he is another one of these guys who, you know, he could have fit on that Detroit card where there was all the next big things. He's got the look. His fighting style is so much fun to watch. He can knock you out. He's competent everywhere.
But, I mean, Swanson beats Duho Choi. The last fight of his contract. There's a lot riding on this for Cub Swanson right now.
Yeah, I mean, Cub Swanson he fought WEC title, but he's never fought for a UFC featherweight
Not for the title, no. So because Aldo beat him in 7 seconds or whatever, and that's just kind of, Mark has stuck with him on his career.
So best career of any UFC fighter not to fight for a title? I mean, with Bisping?
I think there's probably more that we haven't thought of.
I mean, Bisping was that guy for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, Swanson's probably in the mix.
Yeah. I mean, I would have been perfectly fine with him getting bumped in front of Aldo for the Holloway fight at 218. So I think I don't think Ortega gets a title shot if he wins.
Yeah.
But I think Cub probably does.
Yeah.
Although his contract's up.
I mean, if Cub wins this fight, he's getting paid. He's getting paid by the UFC or Bellator. He's getting paid. Like, this is a career-changing fight for Cub Swanson. Like, this is the fight. This is probably the most important fight of his career.
Yeah, career-defining. I mean, you can argue the Frankie Edgar fight a couple years back.
Yeah,
but
like, he has to prove once again that he's not a gatekeeper because he beat Duho Choi, and he was the gatekeeper for Duho Choi, and he shut that gate. Yeah. Now he needs to shut the gate against Brian Ortega. And personally, I think he will. I think Cub Swanson will emerge victorious if I had to make a prediction in this fight.
I mean, we'll
have to see.
Anytime you're seeing these guys jump, like an Ortega, who has been an elite prospect, I think right now, I genuinely do think if he wins, he probably has one more fight before a title shot just to build his name a little bit. But that's promotional stuff. You never know how these guys are going to do against the truly elite fighters, and Cub Swanson is a truly elite. We saw Yair Rodriguez go up against Frankie and just get destroyed.
Yeah.
And, you know, these top three guys who have been fighting top three, top five fighters for 5 years, they have experience that you just can't.
And speaking of featherweight gatekeepers, in 2 weeks we've got Lamas on the card. Jason Knight was had the gate shot on him as well by the bully Ricardo Lamas. He's in the co-main event against Gabriel Benitez. I honestly think that this is a WWE Superstars type fight where you're trying to bump up Jason Knight. I mean, Benitez is coming off a loss. I know Knight is as well, but Knight's one of these guys that I think is going to be in the next wave of top featherweights.
Yeah, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with him with Yair Rodriguez taking big losses to top guys.
Yeah,
I mean, you go back, you learn. It's the old cliche that you learn more from your losses than you win. I think
featherweight is the best division right now in the UFC.
God, it's fun.
When you just look at guys that are coming up, if you look at the Jason Knights, you look at Duho Choi, you look at Zabit, you look at Yair. These are young guys, hungry guys, and then the champion is a young, hungry guy. Like, Max Holloway's younger than Zabit. Everybody's like, Zabit's this next big prospect. Max Holloway's younger than him.
Max Holloway is a gift from whatever
guy
we
choose.
Yeah,
he could be the best ever. Like, if he keeps winning, he's right now on the road to becoming the best of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah.
If he can just keep beating these guys.
And I mean, it's great because, like, you mentioned how middleweight, you know, a year and a half ago was like that. I do feel like lightweight, we've got very established contenders in that division's just a mess because of Connor.
Yeah.
So really, it is featherweight.
Yeah.
There's nowhere where there's just more exciting guys who you don't want to miss.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it also opens the closet for Max to add more wins to his under his belt of guys that he hasn't beaten, because he's beaten so many guys already. He's beaten Lamas. He's beaten Swanson.
Yeah.
Did he
beat Cub? When was the Cub?
He beat Cub a couple years ago. Yeah. Okay. And that's another hindrance for Cub getting a shot.
Yeah.
He hasn't beaten Edgar. Edgar's the one guy.
Frankie's
that,
next.
That Holloway
they'll do.
Frankie will
next.
Be next, but he also, if he fractured his orbital, like, it could be a year, you know.
Could it?
Yeah.
So, well, there you go.
So we'll have to see. Like, if Ortega wins, he's probably next in line.
That's interesting. I don't necessarily know that he should. I truly believe that they should give him another fight after this. I mean, again,
Cub is like a top four guy, I believe, in the division, if I'm not mistaken. So. And then Holloway's beating the other guys. So that's where it could just be, again, Kismet and Ortega beat Swanson and gets the shot.
I'm sure that Dana White would love to push Ortega into that slot.
For sure.
And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. I think, personally, as a fighter, you need one or two of those elite guys before you fight for the title.
And then you've got Marlon Moraes versus Aljamain Sterling. A huge litmus test for Sterling, I think. I think there are way more questions about Sterling than there are Marlon Moraes in this fight. And I think that if Moraes wins, you know, suddenly bantamweight gets a lot more interesting, because he's a guy that had such success outside of the organization. His first loss against Rafael Assuncao was a very, very coin flip decision that could have gone either way.
Against Assuncao?
Yeah. Like, against Assuncao, it looks great.
Yeah, he was a legitimate, you know, contender for the battle.
And a guy who's
times.
Beaten Dillashaw.
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting fight. Some other notes about this card. Eric Anders, I think, is a guy that you need to watch. He's former linebacker for Alabama. Like, I mean, this is just a supreme athlete. And when you put guys like that in the middleweight division in the UFC, it's like just power to find.
He's a linebacker and he's at middleweight. That's absurd.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was a linebacker.
Yeah. He cuts weight to get to 185, but he's just a big dude. I think his size was what prevented him from getting to the NFL. But he won a BCS bowl. Like, I mean, he's a legitimate, was a legitimate top athlete. So that's interesting. Luke Sanders versus Andre Sukumtot, I think, is the dark horse on this card for a fight that could be very, very good. Kind of a must win for Sukumtot, who I think is a talented guy. And I think Luke Sanders is a phenomenal talent as well. Got caught by Alcantara earlier in the year, who's actually on the prelims, the Fight Pass prelims of this card. So I think it's one of these ones where if you watch it, there will be fights that will be interesting. The California State Athletic Commission actually forced Carl's Jones DeThomas and Alex Perez to move up to bantamweight because DeThomas previously weighed in at 135 to fight at flyweight, and for the health and safety of the fighters, they want to move it up a division, which they've done before.
I love the California Commission because they don't get bullied, and they actually do seem to take fighter safety really seriously.
Yeah, so. I mean, unless it's a championship fight, I think it's the right thing to do. If you think if you're weighing guys and they're not on pace to make weight, why make them kill themselves to get there, right?
And does the UFC really care if a undercard fight is fought in one division or the other?
Yeah.
I mean, for them, it's a fight's a fight. I think it's a right call.
Hey, I forgot to mention, we have a new champion in the UFC.
Whitaker?
No.
Are we talking the Ultimate Fighter?
Yeah, Nico Montaño, the new flyweight champion of the UFC. I want to try to get her on the show because she mentioned on Tough that the reason why it was important for her to win the championship was because it would give her a platform to discuss being a Navajo.
That's awesome.
Of Navajo descent. And I think that's an interesting story. How long she holds on to the belt, I think, is up in the air, especially if Valentina Shevchenko is the next challenger.
Yeah.
But she looked good. She looked good against Mata Ferry. She looked great on the show. Mm-hmm. So kudos to her. I mean, she was coming off a loss professionally, and now she's the champion. I don't want to diminish her accomplishment. I think that, you know, she won the show fair and square. That was the stakes. People had the right to try out for that show. If Valentina wanted to be on that show, she could have been. Obviously, she was fighting for the bantamweight championship and wouldn't have done that. But Paige VanZant could have been on that show if she wanted to. She could have been the champion. So kudos to her. She did it the right way, and I'm not going to take anything away from her.
And I don't take anything away from her. I will say that we were in Detroit for that card. I attempted to watch the whole thing. It had been 2 weeks on the road. And the pacing on that card was just, it was a really long night.
Yeah.
And
there were a lot of good fights on that card, though.
They were all good fights. I literally, though, by the end, I was ready for bed. So I actually skipped that fight and haven't watched it yet. So I am uniquely unqualified to comment on
who I like how it took you a while to figure out who I was talking about.
Well, it's because I went to sleep.
Yeah. So that was a card we're really not going to recap, but it was actually a pretty good card. I thought that Ryan James, the Canadian, particularly looked good. The Canadian Zombie showed why he was called the Canadian Zombie.
Is he out of Victoria?
Yeah, Victoria. Yeah. Good week for Victoria.
Yeah.
Ariel Helwani reported that Sarah Kaufman signed with Invicta, and James has that big win, although he got robbed of a win bonus, as Paul Felder told me he agreed with when I interviewed him after the fact. James trains in Victoria and also trains with Duke Rufus. So he splits time between those two camps. So kudos to him. I want to give him a shout-out on the show before we go to our next guest.
We should mention Alexis Davis really quickly.
Yeah, Alexis Davis, Canadian on the card against Liz Carmouche at flyweight.
Sorry to,
so she will be ranked in the top 10 if she gets in the probably in the top 5 of the flyweight division with a win here.
Crazy.
Yeah, same with Carmouche. I do want to talk to our next guest, Chad Laprise. He's fighting next weekend at UFC Winnipeg. I know he really wanted to fight in Edmonton, so I'll be sure to ask him about that. And he joins us now on the TSN MMA show. Chad, we spoke after your last win earlier this year. You really wanted to fight in Edmonton. Now you're fighting in Winnipeg. Is it good to have a fight in Canada this year?
Yeah, I'm definitely happy to be fighting back in Canada. You know, anytime the UFC offers me a fight there, I feel like I'm the Canadian guy, so I will definitely accept it.
I mean, the only difference is it was 23 degrees in Edmonton and it's going to be minus 15 in Winnipeg. But, you know, can't win them all.
It's definitely going to be a little colder there, but I think I think Galore will be suffering a little more than me coming over there from England.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
So with Galore, I mean, this is a guy who only has one UFC fight under his belt. He defeated a guy who has no wins in the UFC. Do you think he's biting off a little more than he can chew here?
He's in for a whole nother level when he fights me. You know, I have more fights in the UFC than he has fights, period. You know, but he's definitely he's a world kickboxing champion. He's a world point fighting like karate style champion. You know, so I'm definitely not taking him lightly. He's a super explosive athlete, but there's definitely levels to this game, and he's going to feel it when he faces me.
He might be the most unorthodox striker in all of the UFC, really. How do you train for a guy like that? Do you bring in anybody with a similar skill set, or are you just going to be Chad?
No, I absolutely put in the best training camp. I can guarantee you that anybody who has ever fought Galore put in I brought in the best point fighting karate guys, the best taekwondo guys. Every week, day in, day out, sparred. I probably sparred 1,000 rounds getting ready for this fight, just to familiarize myself with that style, right? So I put the work in, and I 100% learned some little techniques. And you know what? It actually made me a better fighter. So I'm really looking forward to going against this style and shutting it down.
Yeah, you know, my co-host Joe Valtellini, he's not here with me today, but he defeated Raymond Daniels, and he often says that he feels people need to look at what the rather than fighting against point karate guys, they should look at what the template should be to beat guys that are good in that skill set. Is that something you've done?
So I actually watched some of Joe Valtellini's videos and watched his fights with Raymond Daniels. I've actually trained with Raymond Daniels before as well, right? So. And I watched when Nicky Holskin fought Raymond Daniels. So I've watched on how guys shut that style down. And I've also brought the guys in and been able to shut them down in the gym.
Well, that's great. I mean, who are some guys that you brought in to train for the specific fight?
Yeah, so my main guy, his name is Tom Roberts. He's like a 14-time world point fighting karate champion. And him and I trained every single day getting ready for this fight. And he'll actually be coming out to Winnipeg with me to a corner. I brought a guy, Jason McIntyre, in from Sarnia, who's a taekwondo guy, and another guy from Toronto, Matt Ross, who's also a national-level taekwondo sparring partner. But Tom Roberts, he owns a karate school here in London, and he was one of my main training partners for this fight, and then he'd also bring in his students for me. So I got tons of different looks from my different guys.
Well, nobody can accuse you of not doing your homework, I suppose, after this fight.
I guarantee you, like I said before, I put in the best training camp that anybody has ever put in to a fight club of Fondo. Like I said, you know, the guy doesn't have the experience that I have, but I'm not taking him lightly at all. There was no stones that were unturned in this training camp.
You know, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Georges St-Pierre. On Thursday, he vacated the middleweight title. He's a fellow Canadian. I believe you've trained with him at times at TriStar. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I've trained a ton with George.
Yeah, so he drops the middleweight title. What did you think of his decision, you know, in terms of what it means for the sport and his rationale, which he doesn't want to hold up the division. He's got young, you know, there are young guys like Kelvin Gastelum and Robert Whittaker, who he named by name when we had spoken to him. What are your thoughts on his decision?
You know, it just shows what kind of person George is. You know, awesome for him. He could definitely sit on that belt and wait around for as long as he wants, but he wants to give it up and let the new guys come in and make some money. You know what I mean? So awesome. He's such a class act, and George doesn't owe anybody anything. George should do whatever George wants to do. So happy to see him vacate the belt, and hopefully he'll come back again for one more big fight.
Yeah, do you think that happens? And if so, who do you think would be the optimal opponent for George to? I mean, if he's only going to do one more fight, if he, you know, it can be anybody. Is there anybody that stands out to you that would be a huge money fight for him, or something that will help elevate, I guess, his already legendary status?
Yeah, I personally, George can do whatever George wants to do, but to see him and Connor in a big super fight would be pretty cool.
That's a name that keeps coming up, is Connor. You know, I think that would obviously be a big money fight. Do you think that that's a fight Connor would want to do? I mean, George will be much bigger than him, unless, you know, maybe they fight at a catch weight, 160, 165.
Yeah, and you know what? George is really not that big. Like, George wasn't even really big for welterweight, so he could definitely do a catch weight or even fight at welterweight. But no, I think if George and Connor win, that George grappling is just far superior.
I mean, you're a bigger guy that's fought at 155, and you're staying at 170 now, from what I understand. In terms of your size compared to George, do you think George could cut down to 155 pounds and try to seize three championships?
Yeah, for sure he could. There was times when I was in Montreal, and I was heavier than him. You know, he's super lean. He's a super lean guy. But, I was walking around heavier than he was sometimes, and I was fighting at 55. So it's definitely possible, but it's all on what he wants to do.
Well, am I right about that? You're not looking to fight at 155 again? You're enjoying having a full body mass at 170?
No, I feel so much better fighting at 170. No, I'm 1 week up from weigh-ins. I'm only 10 pounds off weight, eating like crazy. My energy levels are through the roof, and you're going to see it in this performance.
Yeah, well, really looking forward to it. I mean, this card in Winnipeg is absolutely fantastic. There are a lot of Canadians on it. When you look at the main event, that's at 170 as well. You look at Lawler versus Dos Anjos. Who do you think has the advantage in that one?
That's a great fight. That's an awesome fight, and I'm fans of both guys. I'm really fans of both guys too. So I don't know really who will win, but after my fight, I will be sitting in the back in the green room watching for sure.
It's kind of a showcase of talent at 170 pounds because you've also got Ponzinibbio versus Perry.
Yeah,
and that's you know, we look at Gaethje Alvarez. It's that sort of fight. It's going to be two guys that are not going to be afraid to pull any punches with legitimate one punch knockout power.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Ponzinibbio is a little more technical, though, and if I was just towards somebody, I would lean towards him.
When you look back at your season of the Ultimate Fighter Smash, Ultimate Fighter Nations, rather, there's a lot of good talent that has come from that particular season. You know, you've got yourself, you've got Elias, you've got Olivier Cajun Johnson has looked great recently. Would you like to see another season of the Ultimate Fighter that focuses on Canadians, whether it's against Australia or another country?
Yeah, it was awesome. Now, there's a ton of good guys who came out of there, even Jake Matthews, Dan Kelly, even guys on the Australia side too. But, you know, it was my foot in the door for the UFC. That was 4 years ago when we filmed that show, you know, so it'd be awesome if they could do another one, especially for there's so many good young guys coming up who kind of just need a break, you know. That's the spot I was in. I was 7-0 at the time and just needed a break, and that's what happened for me.
And you look at TKO being back on the map. I'm sure a lot of the guys you train with at Adrenaline have had an opportunity to fight there or will have an opportunity to fight there.
Yep.
Does it seem like it's a renaissance period for Canada?
Yeah, you know, for the TKO show, it's awesome. I have two of my teammates fighting on they're fighting there tonight. Colin Bakey is fighting tonight, and Jesse Boston fighting for the lightweight title. So, you know, it's a great show, and it's definitely promoting guys around here.
Yeah, you won't want to miss that. That's on Fight Pass as well as the Fight Network. Yeah, so if you want to watch it, and of course, you know, our TSN analyst Robin Black will be calling the action as the color commentator, along with John Ramdean, you know, who's just so knowledgeable of the sport. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Chad. We really appreciate your time and your opinions on the sport, and we really look forward to seeing you perform against Galor Bafondo. Should be a fun fight, a very interesting fight.
Thank you very much. Appreciate talking to you.
That was Chad Laprise. Always love speaking to him. Great to hear his insights on the George St. Pierre situation. Danny, thanks for coming in and co-hosting with me. I'd love to do it again sometime.
Man, it's a pleasure. I love what TSN is doing with the sport and what you in particular. I really think you're helping you know, shine a spotlight on the right areas in the sport. So anytime you want, and I'm in Toronto, let's do it again.
All right, awesome. Thanks for doing this, and I appreciate you flying all the way in from Calgary just to be on the podcast. It's fantastic.
So do my parents.
Yeah. Next week, Joe's back. We're going to recap the UFC Fresno card, talk about what happened at UFC Winnipeg, and I'm sure all the other crazy news that happens in the span of a week during this crazy sport. So much to talk about at all times. And shout out to Joe. He's going to be the voice of glory this weekend, as he always is. They've got a pay-per-view. Rico Verhoeven taking on Jamal Ben-Sadiq, and that's on pay-per-view. You can order it on Fight Pass pay-per-view if you're interested in that. It's a fantastic card. And, of course, it's also available, I believe, on the Fight Network if you want to watch the Glory Super Fight Series, which, again, is also on Fight Pass. So make sure you check that out. Always love having Joe here, and he'll be back next week. And thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to the TSN MMA Show. For all the latest UFC news, visit tsn.ca/UFC.